You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Oh man, every time I get the call from EuroLeague about the confirmation of my next guest on The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas, I usually get mixed emotions. Sometimes I know everything about them. Sometimes my guests are guys that I know a little bit about, but I learn a lot along the way. And in this case, I really hate to admit it, but I knew nothing about our next coach. Usually these guys are my age, I've known them for years, but while I decided to make a life in Europe, I should say, this guy decided to make a life in my old country, the US of A. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Crossover, Coach Igor Kokoshkov, today's podcast. How are you, my man? Everything good, Coach?
Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm very excited. I was very patient all these years too, and finally I wait my turn to be on your show. So that's, I'm glad I'm with you guys today.
It's funny because one of my first things is nice to meet you. Obviously, we met just before we started this thing. But it's like, I look at you and I'm like, why have I never met this guy before at some point or another? And when I did all your research, I'm like, you've been gone forever. You've been in the States for almost your whole life.
Yeah, you don't know me because I don't have witness. Nobody witnessed that I play basketball and nobody saw him put in a ball in a basket. So that's a joke that usually Serbian coaches are using. If we... Coach who never played before, especially on the level that you played, they were saying that he doesn't have a witness that he played a basketball. But I know you much longer than you know me.
Yeah, that's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, the much longer thing is never a good thing when you're 55.
Well, if I played on the level that you play, maybe I wouldn't be here today. So that's why. Kept me in the game.
Mm-hmm. That's a question I got coming for you. But I want to start this with, I think it's because I want to base the most of the interview on one of your favorite sayings that we know, slow river splits the mountain. I think that saying is something that you live by, according to the interviews that I've seen. I assume everybody kind of knows exactly what that means when you could almost imagine the creek going through the mountain, splitting the mountains and seeing the water flowing. But most people live their lives by you know, seize the day, live every day like it's your last. This is just a little bit more profound. Exactly what has it meant to you and where did you get it from?
Well, first of all, I never had a doubt that I'm going to be in this business at the age of 14, 15, or when I started playing basketball. I had a desire and my desire was to stay in the basketball and stay in the sports. My father was a professional soccer player, so I was debating that when I was a teenager, should I play basketball? Should I stay in football? And, you know, my father was nothing but supportive. My high school friends were playing basketball, and that was my dad actually sent me in that direction. But since that early age, when I was a teenager, I knew I'm going to stay in basketball. I didn't know in what kind of capacity. Obviously, now it's obvious in 30 years as a basketball coach. It's pretty clear what I'm doing for a living, and I'm going to retire as a basketball coach. But, you know, just knowing in depth, and, you know, I didn't have a doubt, didn't really search for my job, my identity. And, you know, that helped me to kind of focus on a basketball game, to study the game, and to explore all this, you know, knowledge and experience that I can use for someday when I'm coaching. So, you know, that's why I was patient, because I had no doubt, regardless, I could be a high school coach. You know, I never had a dream. I never pressured myself. I'm going to be in a league. I'm going to be an NBA coach. I'm going to coach Fenerbahce. I think that would put so much pressure that I wouldn't be able to enjoy every practice every day if I was by accident, by circumstances. If I'm coaching cadet team in Belgrade, Serbia, where I started, I would still be same guy, same coach. It just, a lot of times, like I said, circumstances and a little luck helps you to be where you are today.
Obviously, your journey was somewhat difficult. And I mean, it seems, when you read about it and you research it, it seems pretty easy. It seems pretty basic. But I mean, you went through, obviously, at our age, you went through the whole Yugoslavian split up, the civil war. How difficult was that for a young athlete? I mean, I've talked to so many different Croatians, Yugoslavians, and they all have their own little story about it. How difficult was it for you in your case? You had a mom, your mom was worked in the government also, from what I understand, and your dad, apart from playing, was an X-ray technician.
Well, you know a lot about me.
Yeah, well, we, yeah. You know, coach, this is why they give me the job, man. You know?
Appreciate it. But yes, I grew up in Yugoslavia. I grew up in Yugoslavia and played and that was junior level, but we Yugoslavia was a great country. One of the so many you know different cultures, different religions, and
but outside of Yugoslavia, most people knew it for basketball.
Yes, I mean, think about it. At that time, I would say that it was a three. With all respect, the rest of the world, but it was a Russian, it was Soviet Union basketball school, American school, and Yugoslavian school. Rest of the world was following, and nobody was practicing twice a day. I think the Yugoslavian basketball coaches were the first who started playing practicing twice a day. In America, nobody practiced twice a day. Soviet Union, I don't know. At that time, it was unknown world, but Yugoslavia.
No wonder why I didn't like a lot of those Serbian coaches.
I understand. That's evolution of the basketball game. It's exactly. Impossible right now. But we didn't know better. We didn't know better. A mystification of the American basketball. We didn't know what's happening in Soviet Union. And we started practicing twice a day. But really enjoying learning from the great basketball coaches. I think we established great basketball coaches. And for years, for decades, Yugoslavian coaches were denying. They were denying that there is a Yugoslavian basketball school. But I can tell you, there is a very defined way of recruiting, selecting players, developing players, having courage to play young players, which was very, very important things, very important thing to have a successful team, because you're developing individually, you're developing players, and that's how you're developing the teams. But make a long story short, I really enjoy, and that's a great life experience. Growing up, unfortunately, I wish nobody ever experienced a war as something that it's a part of your life, but that journey is also something that helped me to appreciate more what we have today. And it's obviously war never brought anything good to anyone, but you know, it's really teaches a lesson that we're taking these things for granted every day, where we can, even living in this era of pandemic, that I can have a coffee with my best friend, or we can have a fans watching EuroLeague games. So I think we should learn a lesson, and teach us a lesson, to appreciate what we have every day.
There's always something to learn in life, and there's always a way to make a positive out of a negative. One of my questions to you is, you mentioned yourself as a player before. I've read various things. Obviously, we'll get into how your career was cut short, but let's say, for example, you're coaching the game tomorrow, which I think you are tomorrow, the next day. And an 18-year-old Igor Kokoskov is on the other team. Give me the scouting report on him, and what are you going to have your players do to control him? What kind of player were you? Is about what we're looking for.
Against that kid who is 18 years old?
Yeah, against you when you were
18.
You know
it is in a league, the number one thing, attack him, see if he can defend. So put a pressure on him, make him defense first, and offensively, you know, challenge his shot. Usually young players, they don't come with the confidence to shoot a ball. Everybody went through that. You know, Luka Doncic now, one of the most dominant players in the league. First couple of years, even, you know, Jacob was saying, let's go under every pick. Let's go under, force him to take those shots and earn rights for him, for us to close that hard on his shots. And so, you know, that's, but make him defend first. That would be the number one thing.
Were you a good defender?
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, like, again, I was, but I don't feel comfortable, because, you know, your game, you don't have to say anything about your game, because your game was speaking about you, and I would.
But everybody says I didn't defend, though, coach. Everybody says I didn't defend anybody.
I did, and I really enjoyed playing defense. You know, that was my thing.
I had the dream as a young kid to become a professional athlete. I think as most of us did, and I had a freak accident that happened to me that could have ended my career. Yours wasn't a freak accident. You're at 18, you're doing your military service. You had a major car accident. And that, I mean, other than being in shock, other than going through everything that you had to go through, how does a person deal with that? I mean, because just getting to point into the Yugoslavian national team, you're growing into, you have a father's an ex-athlete, everything's going perfect for you, and this happens. Two things. One is, what do you remember the most? And two is, what was it like when a doctor actually said the first time that you'll never play this game again?
Right. I spent almost 11 months in the hospital for a couple of different occasions, several surgeries. And it's the one thing I would like to share with your viewers and people who are listening, watching your show, that, again, turning something negative into the positive. Mm-hmm. Because I was in a state of shock, understanding that I'll never be able to play, you know, the game that I love the most, and that's playing basketball. But it's a strange, you know, I was 18, pretty young, unexperienced with in terms of the life experience. But, you know, it's hard to describe that I felt happy, because the one part was happy. Part of me was happy saying that it could be worse. It could be worse. Maybe, you know, what if I'm not able, if I lost a leg and if I can't walk anymore, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I was trying to turn something positive, and that was probably something that helped me to make decision, make up my mind, and because I knew I'm going to stay in basketball, and I start thinking how I'm going to help myself and help the game and being involved in the basketball game, and I start coaching high school level, which is kind of a team, and slowly I was and I still felt I'm a part of the game, and that was very important to me.
But you know, the rehab part for a player is, I'm assuming that I've been through it, and most athletes that have played have been through an injury and they've had to rehab and come back. And there's always like that prize at the end of the, you know, every day you wake up, you go to rehab, and you know that you're going to be back on the court soon. You know you have your spot. This type of rehab, you have, you're filled with unanswered questions. I mean, in your head, you're thinking that I'm going to stay in the game, no doubt, but you don't know at what capacity. And it's not like you've studied to be a coach up until 18. You've just known the game. How hard is it to go through rehab when there's no prize at the end of the road?
Now, think about that from this perspective. I had my own crisis, and going 3-4 times, I was trying to come back, trying to convince myself that I can play. And that was so obvious, you know.
That was another question. Did you not believe the coaches or the doctors? I mean, did you just like, forget it, I'm going to try anyways?
Yeah, I felt like maybe I can still fight through, and maybe, you know, I can work on my body and straighten my leg and keep playing. But it was impossible. Just you know, a couple of weeks later, I would realize that it's not just rehab. It's just my body wasn't in shape, and then that was a permanent thing. So I was fighting for several years, and now thinking about it from this perspective, you know, I've been going through some crisis and thinking that I can play, but I just, unfortunately, I couldn't.
You know, we're told at a young age, my father told me all the time, he's like, you study, make sure you get your degree, make sure you get your education, because this could end tomorrow. But when you're playing, you never think it's going to end tomorrow. Never.
Right. I know. I've been dealing with my father used to say, you always remember your first coach and the last coach. And the last coach mm-hmm. who told you that you can't play anymore. And you always feel bitter. You feel bitter about that guy. And he just told you the truth. So but one thing helped me at that time, and that when I was struggling and recovering from the car accident, the fact that I was starting physical education. So I was kind of sending myself into that studying physical education, generally speaking, and focusing on academics. Right. And that's a kind of perspective that kind of started leaning more to the studying the human body from anatomy to physiology and all other aspects of the physical education, and obviously basketball. So little by little, I was leaning towards being like studying the game and coaching the game instead of being on the court playing.
Guys like Melkovic, Ivkovic, I mean, the names just, I could keep flowing them off. We don't have enough time here to name all the incredible coaches that have been through those systems. You became the youngest Yugoslavian coach to head an elite team in your club. Is that something that, I mean, it's not an award, it's not a trophy, but at that point, did it mean a lot to you because of your journey and what you've been through?
Yeah, it was a quick punch. You know, it was a quick punch that hit me right in the face. And I was very young, but that kind of sent me a message, and it was a wake-up call for me how much I have to work on my game and how far I am from the being ready to coach my own team. That situation happened by circumstances, by accident. But I was coaching team for a short period of time, and it was a kind of neat experience. Again, from this point of view, from this perspective, that I know I want to be here, but I'm not ready, and how much work I have to put in to someday to be prepared to coach my own program.
I mean, you got to feel with those names that you don't belong.
Right, just, exactly. You know. Absolutely. And just, you know, from the everything, you know, just not just understanding the game, but just being mature enough to deal with the players, with the locker room, game preparation and everything else. But again, it was a good starting spot, good starting position for me to understand that it's got a lot of work ahead of me.
What one of your influences was Boris Senich, no? The coach.
Yeah, he's a legendary coach, and you know, when he used this opportunity just to I don't know if people and basketball.
I was just gonna give you this opportunity.
Yes, Boris Senich fortunately passed away a couple of months ago. He's a legendary coach. He developed not just the players. He developed, and he was developing coaches. A lot of Yugoslavian coaches were going through his school. One of the best methodologists, somebody who was teaching coaches how to be a coaches, how to understand the problem, how to approach the problem, how to break the problems in little segments and put the puzzles together. So it's an unbelievable mentor, unbelievable teacher, and he was one of the reasons why I fall in love with basketball game.
Of course, you know, rest in peace. I mean, he passed away a little over a month ago now. I'm obviously he was influential, but I learned something. I told you I learn a lot during these interviews, and I love to learn because we all need to learn something every day. And I was amazed that he was known more as a female coach. He coached more women's basketball almost as he did men's.
Right. And I don't know him at that time. You know, he was much, much, obviously, he belonged to the different generation where he was coaching his own team. He was more female coach, but he was working with the women's programs and teams. And then he dedicated his life to developing coaches working Serbian basketball coaching school. So he was mentoring coaches. He was doing a lot of clinics, a lot of presentations, and he was a walking encyclopedia, basketball encyclopedia. You know, he had more drills than all other coaches combined.
I was looking up some stuff and I saw something on YouTube, but I looked and they said something about him doing a drill like less than a year ago. I'm like, no, that can't be him. And I turned it on and it wasn't him. It was somebody teaching his philosophies. But I was like, right, man, if he's still doing it. But let's jump over to America if we want to talk about that. I mean, now you somehow or another, you get a Yugoslavian coach. I don't know how the hell you get to America after everything you've been through. But one of the people that you do hook up with in the beginning is Jim Calhoun, who coached against me when I was at Nyack University, and Gino Auriemma, who's
the Hall of Fame. Both of them Hall of Fame coaches.
Incredible. I mean,
they did so much for college basketball. The legends, both of them, really unbelievable programs. You know, Gino.
I mean, if Gino's coaching the men's team at Connecticut, he's the greatest coach to ever coach in the NCAA. Right now, he's better than Coach K. He's better than Tom Izzo. He's better than all of them.
Right, no question. You know, that's basically his first. My first trip to the United States, he was the first coach that I met. Actually, I traveled to visit UConn University. I mean, Connecticut University, and spent some time with Coach Calhoun. But I came to the campus, and the men's team was on a road trip, and I was bored. I didn't know anything about, college life, et cetera. So I was just searching for some kind of basketball experience. They told me that Gino Auriemma is coaching. They have a practice that day. I went to watch his practice.
Coach, most people look for a college bar.
So I didn't. I was just
to go see the co-eds, you know?
I was looking for the closest gym, and Gino was there. He was an unbelievable host. He just opened his doors, and I had an unbelievable time. We're still talking, get a lot of respect for his work, and you know, like you said, his for sure, probably the most successful college coach in the history of the NCAA.
How does one not only get to the States from where you were, but I mean, you didn't go to like a second division team. You didn't go to a high school. You somehow or another, you got to the best. You got to UConn and their heyday. You got to Coach K the next summer, or maybe a summer or two afterwards as an international program. How? It's hard to understand.
Yeah. It was just, instinct. And at that time I didn't search for a better job. I never had that kind of cockiness or in myself knowing that, you know, I'm gonna go to the States and I'm gonna stay there. I'm gonna get a job and I'm gonna coach an NBA or an NCAA. So that wasn't a plan. I would lie if I would say that was a plan. The plan was to go overseas, to go to the States, to link with the best level and highest level that I can be linked with, get a knowledge, get experience, and come back and you know, coaching my own team, stay in Belgrade, coaching in Serbia at that time. So again, my first trip to the Connecticut, spent some time with Chicago, few universities in Chicago, spent time with Chicago Bulls, and it was an unbelievable experience. It wasn't summertime. I was talking to all these coaches and programs, and I was searching for training camp. You know, the time when they start building their system and their program, and their so I can see from the first practice how that coach, Coach K or Coach Calhoun, how is he developing his team, and you know, from the first day of training camp, how he builds that offense and defensive system. So following year, I did the same thing. I went to University Duke. I spoke with Coach Krzyzewski, who had a lot of respect for Yugoslavian basketball school, because we shouldn't forget that he was coaching USA team. And unfortunately, he lost a couple of finals against Yugoslavian basketball teams. And, you know, he played against one of the best teams that Yugoslavia ever had in the history of Yugoslavian basketball. So he was coaching university games in Zagreb, I believe, 87. And in the World Championship, he was the head coach of the USA team in the World Championship in 1990 in Argentina. So Coach Krzyzewski had a lot of respect for Yugoslavian basketball school. He didn't know who I was, but he knew that I'm coming from the very well known and respected basketball school. And I felt like I'm a part of the staff. I mean, he was so, he opened the doors for, you know, just practices, coaches meetings, when he was meeting with the guys, pre-game preparation, et cetera. And that was a year when there was an NBA lockout year. So a lot of NBA people, a lot of NBA players, ex-Duke players, they would come and watch those games. And I had opportunity just being at the University of Duke to get linked and introduce a lot of NBA people and get in touch with them. So that was just the right time, right place. And I was there.
Do you know when you go there, do you know who Coach K is, and do you know what he means in the
absolutely.
States?
I mean, absolutely.
So you're,
yes.
While you're there, you develop one friendship. I mean, along the way in our life, we meet people who can define our lives in so many different ways. Like you said, your first coach, your last coach, you know, influences along the way. There's so many people that we meet.
Right. I mean, it's instinct. I can say that my grandfather used to tell me that story. Then when he was trying to develop and learn certain job, that he was telling me, like, you have to find who is the best in that business and work for free just to learn how to what's the secret for his success.
Hey, so Coach, just, that's a lost art nowadays. the work for free thing. It's a lost art. People don't get it. Everybody just wants to make money. They don't want the experience. They don't want the education.
They're saying when you pick the job, there's the three things that you should consider. That's education, self-promotion, and money. So those second two things comes later. Obviously, education is number one. You can have those three things in one job. Usually you don't have those three things at the same time. So being with Coach Calhoun, that was at that time, there was elite and one of the best college teams. Following year, Coach K, I mean, he had unbelievable recruiting. He recruited unbelievable team and a lot of talent was at that team. just to share something with your followers. Just the following year, Connecticut and Duke were in NCAA finals. So those two coaches were in the finals. So I had a chance to see two best programs in at that time. So
you weren't cheering for anybody, were you?
No. We just
want to see good basketball. That's
just
all.
Just a little for Coach Quinn Snyder. That's actually my guy. So because you know the age, and I was super young at that time. I was 26. It wasn't really natural for me to spend more time with Coach K. Coach K invited me to the dinner, right, and we spent a lot of time together. But naturally, I was leaning more to the people who were, you know, same generation, same interests, same, and that was Coach Quinn Snyder. Coach Snyder was associate head coach, you know, and we spent so much time together. We became really, really close friends, and that's how everything started.
I mean, that friendship essentially led to other friendships, but that one friendship between you and Quinn Snyder was dictated the next two decades of your life. I mean, obviously you became friends with these people, but they obviously saw something more in you. You were at the time, you're like a pioneer. You're ahead of the time as far as offenses are concerned, spacing, how to use pick and rolls, and how to do different things offensively. That I think people saw, like, it was something that is happening now in basketball that you were already in tune with maybe 20 years ago. And apart from the friendships that dictate the next 20 years of your life, they saw something in you. You just don't become a friend and become an assistant coach at a D1 level or an NBA level.
Right. I agree. I mean, this is, to answer your question, I would like to share one story with you, which is, I think, the biggest compliment that I had during the whole career. When I got my second job in NBA, I moved to Detroit. John Hammond was one of the reasons, dear friend of mine, who was assistant GM, and he was obviously voice who threw my name over there, recommended my name to Coach Larry Brown, who didn't know me at that time. And I felt very thankful, very appreciative for what John Hammond did. I went to his office and I closed the door and I say, thank you for this opportunity. But John Hammond told me one thing that at that time it kind of hurt my feelings, because he said, I didn't help you because you're my friend, you are here because you're a good coach. And I was, my first reaction is like, why are you so mean? I just came to say thank you. But then later I was thinking that it's as a friend, you can go and spend some time and take him somewhere for a drink and dinner and then have a good relationship. But when it comes to the business, in this brutal business, you still need somebody who knows how to get it done and who knows what he's doing. So, one thing that it helped me also, coming from European side in European basketball, at that time, we didn't have a teamwork. We didn't have a big coaching staff that, you know, that coaches would define in certain roles on a coaching staff. And there was be a specialist for something like offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, player development, shooting coach, et cetera. As a young European coach, we had to do everything from the practice preparation to the working with the bigs, working with the smalls, footwork, player developing, game preparation, and tactical thing offensively, defensively. So when I get to NBA, I mean, get to States, they ask me, what's your specialty? What are you doing for a living? I said, I do basketball. And then I throw the joke, whatever gives me a job, I can do that. Whatever you want me to do.
How much... You go from the bench in Division I Missouri with Quinn. You go to the Clippers, and then you spend some time and you go to Detroit. How much bullshit, let's just like say it right out, players that are European players go over and they have to deal with a lot of different things. Adapting to a different society, the language, a little bit of everything. And they're not given any type of confidence by the American people as they come over. How much bullshit did you have to go through as a Division I coach or as an NBA coach coming from Yugoslavia? No one knew who you were. And in all reality, let's look at it the way people look at it. You're taking a job away from an American.
Right. But I have to admit, I mean, this is, you know, you as American, you know, like it's a lot of respect for American society, for American world, for American basketball, because they gave me a chance. So there's some jealousy between coaches, and they're saying, who is this guy who is barely speaks English and he's taking my job? So the jealousy was there, but I got to admit, and it's a fact, that they gave me a chance to be myself, to develop, and to become a head coach in NBA. So a lot of even European market, they have their own certain rules, regulations. They have a license. I didn't have a license to be an NBA coach and to get in the league, and they just gave me a chance to be. So I had little resisting from the colleagues, but the fact is that, you know, if you're good in what you're doing, that American society and American basketball are going to give you opportunity to be yourself and to grow and to show some talent. So I'm very appreciative, very, very thankful for opportunity and for not many places in the world we can say that they would do the same thing. I had no resistance from the players' side, from the front office, from the matter of fact. And we have to understand that was 25 years ago. The NBA and American market was completely different. Now it's trendy. It's a trendy to have a foreign player, to have a foreign coach on your staff. At that time, it was very difficult for foreign players to be on a roster. Coaches, it was impossible. Coaches were like, why we need America? A foreign coach.
That's what I mean. You're the first non-U.S. citizen to become an assistant coach in the NBA in the year 2000. 4 years later, you're with the Pistons, and you win an NBA championship.
And I met American president. So I told my friends the fastest way to come on a tourist visa and to shake a hand for American president is just to win a championship, and then you're going to get an invitation to go to the White House. But that's the fastest way to meet American president.
Yeah, you're filling right into, you're like segueing right into my, this is not a slow river. I'm sorry to tell you. You can live by that philosophy all you want, but this is not a slow river. This is moving pretty quick.
I was just lucky. I would say I'm the first. I'm not the best. I'm just the first guy who was who had opportunity and an entrepreneur in some way. And I would say it wasn't really rational. I was following my grandfather's thoughts and ideas that go and find the best in your business and invest the time and energy, learn how to do it, and then someday it's going to be a job. And that's what he did when he was 18. That's what I did when I was 25. But again, my idea was to go to the States and learn from the best and go back and bring that knowledge and experience to Serbia.
But you said something that's important right in the beginning, and it's something that I always preach and go by. You have to be lucky. Somewhere along the line, you have to be good to be lucky in my mind. But you have to find that break, and you have to take advantage of it. But you have to realize that there's an opportunity there.
Yeah, piggyback on that one is just I would like to add that luck can help you to get to a certain level and to get opportunity. The only quality can keep you there. So exactly. you cannot sustain with luck. You can get opportunity with the luck. That's true. But then last thing is the proof of quality in anything, in the broadcasting, in the media, if you're working in a factory, if you're a cab driver, if you're a coach or player, if you're last in a certain business. That's why, you know, there's some criticism about some coaches, some players, and they're 20, 30 years in the business. There's something good about a guy who is 30 years in the business of basketball.
You're not going to be around for 30 years if you're not good at what you do.
Exactly. luck can help you. Luck, if you're lucky, can give you opportunity, and then you don't deserve. But then pretty soon you'll show the true color and true face. So if you sustain in certain business, then there's something good about you.
When I speak with kids, I was taught as a young age was the first part of your luck is recognizing the moment and knowing that there's a moment. Then after that, it's all up to you. It's, you know, if you haven't recognized the moment, you might miss it somewhere along the way. And every moment could become a big moment. You have to take advantage of it. And that's what you did in the States.
Absolutely. And now we can little analyze the term in term of talent, and talent to be a coach, talent to be a player. Talent is not just a feel for the game and size and soft touch. Talent is a work ethic. Talent is a social intelligence, communication with the people. You know, the fact that you can say good morning and say thank you can help you. I know a lot of people, a lot of players in this league who played for 15 years just to being good guys, who knows, you know, understand their roles and accept the roles so they can embrace those roles and just wave a towel. And when the coach put them in the game, they're thankful for that. So that's a talent too. For coaches, same thing. Understanding the role, accepting the role, so you can embrace the role that you have.
I think other than your profound knowledge of basketball, one of the best assets you have is friend making, because you made, like, along the way you made some really good friends. You talked about Quinn Snyder, John Hammond, now Elvin and Gentry.
The winning helps, I can tell you, just to
add.
Of course
it does.
Because I'm still talking to all my friends for 2004 championship team. We all still, you know, in a group chat from that group. And I don't talk to anybody from the Cleveland Cavaliers staff, because that journey was only 6 months and they fired us. So we didn't stay long together. And that's a joke, of course.
Yeah, but that's what the NBA is all about. I mean, you're hired as a staff, you're fired as a staff usually.
It's all about winning, it is.
Elvin Gentry is the guy who essentially recommends you for what's the biggest step of your career, I'm assuming, is the head coaching job at Phoenix. I mean, is this a pinnacle? Is this like the moment where you're like, because you said you've never really dreamt of this. This isn't a thing that you sit at night, I'm going to be a head coach of an NBA team. What was it for you when you got that?
Can you imagine if that was my goal and the chances are 0.000 and I never achieve it and I'll live for the rest of my life being unhappy? So I would never do that to myself. So
yeah, but you know, unfortunately, coach, there's a lot of athletes that live that too and they don't make it because it's a right. difficult life to make it.
And so, especially as a coach. I mean, I worked for Phoenix Suns for 5 years. After 5 years and half of the decade and being the 5 Eastern Conference Finals with Detroit Pistons, which is really, really a special group of guys. And we achieved a lot together. Make next move, Terry Porter, actually, who became head coach of the Phoenix Suns, brought me to Phoenix. I stayed there for 5 years. I worked with Elvin Gentry. I knew Elvin for many, many years. He's actually the closest friend with John Hammond. So even when I was in Missouri, I had a chance to meet with Elvin, and he was... Obviously, we worked together in Los Angeles for 3 years. And now, like it's you know, life is you know, a small world and in a strange journey that we got together in Phoenix. We worked together for 4 years with Steve Nash. You know, we've been both part of the Steve Nash era and making
one of my favorite all-time players in the NBA.
I mean, one of my favorite people in this business. And I told Steve, you're the worst experience that I had. And that was just nothing but a curse, because after coaching you, I can't comprehend what the other guys can do, what you're doing in terms of the work ethic, being professional, leadership, and just, you know, being professional, being good guy. So, but anyway, spent great time with Elvin Gentry, and he was one of the reasons. I mean, I was very familiar with the city, with that's our home base. I mean, my family, right. we live in Scottsdale since 2008. We still
beautiful that, city.
That's where we live. That's our home. And it was kind of, you know, after experience with the Slovenian national team, winning European championship with the Slovenian national team, Luka Doncic was big upcoming name. My experience with Luka, big debate if he's going to be number one, number two. Phoenix Suns.
Coach, let me get to that, will you? Let me get to that part, please.
Elvin was a big part of the, and he was the voice who actually, not just a voice. I think he gave me a role that I never had before, just to be myself and just to help him. Covering a lot of stuff, especially offensively. Mike D'Antoni brought that a new pace, new style. Mike D'Antoni was very, very experienced and wise coach, with understanding that your best players determine the style of basketball you're going to play. And that was a Steve Nash with up tempo game, with a stretch four, with open court.
What a team, man!
Exactly.
Team.
So Elvin was spending time with Mike D'Antoni and with Steve, it was illogical for Phoenix Suns to keep Elvin, and me being close to Elvin, it was kind of, we built that strong relationship, and kind of Robert Sarver, the owner of Phoenix Suns, and people in the Suns organization felt comfortable. I wasn't a new name for them. I was already spending 5 years in Phoenix Suns organization.
I know this is a question that most coaches don't like to talk about, but I'm asking you in a general aspect, not in names or teams or whatever, but did you have any other possibilities beforehand, any rumors, any interviews for head coaching jobs or any other opportunities like that?
that summer, only in Europe, and it didn't come out, but it was a kind of.
But it wasn't in the NBA. There was no other.
Not an NBA, but you know, Phoenix Suns, they already made up their mind, you know, and there was a lot of teams show interest, but they were behind, they were late, already made commitment. There was a strong indication that I would have a few more teams would interview me for a job that summer.
Mm-hmm. You're in the perfect position. You're head coach of the Phoenix Suns. You have the number one pick. You've coached Luka Doncic, as you said, in the Slovenian team. You know, my question has got to be, the only thing is why the hell do you not take him? I mean, the game has changed to the point where point guards are so much better now to take than they are big guys. I'm not saying anything against the player you chose. I don't want to say that, but I believe, and I think you believe, that if you chose Luka that for that number one pick, all you had to do was say his name, you'd still be there coaching today.
Right. I mean, it would be unfair for me to point the finger in somebody else. NBA is a big corporation. It's a lot of people involved in collecting information, collecting intel, and making final decision. But you know, we all work for Honor. Honor is we all. He signed our checks. He is working. We're working for him, and there's got to be respect. One thing that Robert Sarver, my first journey, first time when I was working for him, he put all coaching staff together, everybody, and told us one thing. I understand there is some stories about this and that, but you know, and criticism the way I'm running this organization. But there is 29 other teams. If you don't like what I'm doing here, you go somewhere else, and that's a fair statement. So. If you don't like what he does, the way he's running and operates, that's his team. He's an owner. He's majority owner of the team. Our job.
He's number one responsible, regardless.
Exactly.
He's paying the checks. He has the right to say that.
Exactly. So exactly. And your job is, I mean, your right is to walk away if you don't like it. To your question is, it's unfair for me to point fingers at somebody else. I feel great. I sleep very peaceful. We share our thoughts, ideas, and at the end, it's a decision that Phoenix Suns is making, and I stood behind that decision, and you know, can't turn back time. We're gonna move forward, and you know, my answer then and now is saying, let's wait another 10, 15 years, and then we'll see who made mistake. Not just 1, 2, 3. You know, there was a great class, and we'll see where the other guy is going to be in that class, and the numbers, the facts, are going to show and answer your question.
Did you have conversation with Luka prior to the draft? I mean, was there ever a possibility that, I mean, when you talked to him, that he might, or did you have to call him up and say, "Hey, look, unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to take you."
No. Luka knows. I got two sons. My son Luka is at home, and he is my second son. His name is Luka. So, but Luka,
two Lukas.
But Luka's was in a great place. I mean, speaking with Luka, Luka knew wherever he goes, he'll be fine. Dallas Mavericks is a great organization. They know what they're doing. They were begging and fighting for Luka. They had no doubts. They were targeting Luka. And they were trying to make a deal with the Phoenix Suns since day one. We can share that information. But for Dallas Mavericks, there wasn't doubt who is number one.
Right.
So we had some doubts. We pick Ayton, and we got to live with that.
One of my questions is, because I love that you have so much experience in the NBA, because my experience is limited, but I do have a philosophy or a thought process. And if Luka, who was drafted by the Atlanta Hawks, doesn't get moved to Dallas in a system, because it's a lot about systems in the NBA. It's a lot about being in the right place at the right time. Is Luka the same player he is today if he's in Atlanta? But is he a two-time All-Star? Is he a Rookie of the Year if he sits in Atlanta instead of going to Dallas?
He's not average Joe. He's not average Joe. He's not average player. I think Luka is a way of too big player to... I think he would demand certain things. He would change a system. And your job as a coach is to play and develop system and adjust your system based on your best players. So pretty soon, regardless on your playbook and philosophy, defensive and offensive philosophy, that coach would have to adjust and understand that it's a little bit different player on the court. Think about Rick Carlisle, who was a very demanding coach, very structured. And Rick would call every play. Watch his, through all his career, he would call every play. So it's a fast break and set play set, which is pretty common thing for Europe, not for NBA. But not having Luka Doncic, I mean, he barely calls anything. There is only a lot of freedom, a lot of freelancing, a lot of open court, and then ATOs that Rick controls. So, but Rick is a smart coach, understanding that is a Luka is a little bit different player, and he should adjust to the best player, which is Luka. So regardless, he came to Phoenix, he would find a way to play with Booker, he would find a way to adjust and change Atlanta, like just the way he changed Dallas Mavericks team.
All right. I'm not so sure about that, but I have to listen to you. You have much more experience than
well,
I
if
do.
You want to try, if you try to keep your job as a coach, you have to adjust your.
Well, that's exactly it. I just feel like some players get lost in certain places in the NBA because of the system, because of whatever.
Yeah, that's extreme case, and that's the stubbornness that you have, or you have a maybe even better player who's got a certain demands. We had a Shaquille O'Neal and Steve Nash playing together. Think about it, we had three and a half Hall of Fame players on our team in Phoenix Suns, my first year. Three Hall of Fame players, but we couldn't make a playoffs. We didn't make a playoffs that year because pieces, excellent pieces, didn't fit together.
Right. I know Fenerbahce fans right now are happy that you didn't take Luka in the first round. Because although I will say I want to finish up the interview now because I know you I appreciate your time and I want to try to get you out of here as quick as possible, but it couldn't have been very easy with the Fenerbahce fans the first couple months.
Right. I mean,
as we speak right now, I just want people to know as we're speaking and we're taping this, you're on a 10-game winning streak. I'm not here to jinx anything, but you're on a 10-game winning streak. You've turned this team around.
That's just me, and we're trying to act same way as a group. When we don't fly too high, we don't drop too low. I mean, it's a long season. There's just a one chapter in this season. Knocking on wood, we're healthy right now. We're in a good moment. Momentum is there for us. But things can change, and one game can change everything. We know that's especially in this league, especially in Europe. So we know who we are. We have a lot of veteran players. They've been in this league for a long time. And as long as we're healthy, we're together. We have a good group of guys who are willing to play together and sacrifice for each other, and that put us in a good position to be successful this year.
Do you have a good relation with Selko?
Very good. Very good. We worked together. I worked for him for two summers as assistant coach. Jacob was the head coach of the Serbian national team 2004-2005. I didn't know him before that, but he accepted me as a young coach, and he put me on his, on his staff and treated me like we were friends for a long, long time. I'll never forget the way he was. Again, he treated me that time, and we're still very close friends. He is. I can really consider him as one of my basketball mentors and close friends.
How difficult was it taking his place at Fenerbahce and then and getting off to the start that you guys got off? Because I remember Barcelona, you guys lost by 30. You came to Madrid, lost by 20. It was a rough ride for you guys.
Right. We had a couple of good games to start the season, but thanks for reminding me in those nights when I when I was sitting in my room. Just thinking why. But, Nando was hurt. He wasn't on our team at that time. Jan Veselý was missing some games, didn't play. Play in Barcelona, didn't play against Real Madrid, et cetera, with 20 injuries in the first part of the season. But, now we can talk about it because it's behind us. It's a past. If you use that, then you sound like it's excuse. But no excuse. There is no excuse in this league. There's a winning and misery, so nothing in between. But, it's a long journey, and credit to Fenerbahce, I never felt pressure from Fenerbahce organization, but pressure for myself that I have to give something back. This is one of the biggest sports clubs in the world with 30 million members, the fan members. So it's unbelievable. So I feel responsible to give something to those guys who love Fenerbahce, and that's all. But again, credit to Fenerbahce organization because they're looking at the big picture, understanding that it's a long season, and if you're building something special, it's a process.
Last question for you before we do the two final steps of our interview. it's a question that as I researched, as I wrote all my questions, as I did everything, kept popping into my head for some reason. And I said, I have to ask it last. If you didn't get in that car accident and everything had gone as planned, and you were a basketball player and you played at a top division, and you, let's say you played till you're 35, 36, whatever, what would you be doing today? Because your life is totally different. You wouldn't spend 20 years in the NBA. Everything's redefined.
Well, coaching on the top level, on the world top level, being in EuroLeague and obviously 20 years in NBA, I wasn't built and structured mentally and physically to play that level. So I think I would be like, I wouldn't say mediocre player, but average player. And who knows what would happen after that. I would be maybe sick and tired of basketball. I wouldn't be here. So, you know, maybe that's just a, you know, blessing from the sky that, again, it's a tough message to teach someone at the age of 18. But I'm glad that I'm here today, and I'm very, very happy with what I achieved. And you know, this is just I wouldn't change again. Coming back to the, you know, little luck, little circumstances, but I would still be in basketball if I stay in Belgrade and I was coaching still junior or cadet level. I was still doing, because basketball is my life.
That's perfect. Let's finish this thing up with a couple questions and then a trivia.
One-on-One with Joe Arlukas.
You got a free round trip ticket to go anywhere in the world. What's your destination?
Go see my friend in Cancun. That's our place. That's where we're hiding.
Right now, get me a ticket too. I'll go with you. As a coach, this is a tough one. Last movie you watched or series?
House of Cards, famous.
House of Cards, I love it. One of my favorites.
I heard that President Putin was telling his assistants to watch so he can learn more about other people.
I love that.
Could be a true story.
It's just a rumor. If you watch The House of Cards, you tend to think like, man, how did they know what was going to happen sooner or later?
Well, it's helping you in this business too, I think.
Exactly.
You're swimming with the sharks. But the more talent you have, the less time you have to spend watching House of Cards.
You sit down at a table, you can order any food in the world. What is it?
Sushi, not even close. Sushi is number one.
Your childhood idol?
Dražen Petrović.
Pre-game superstitions? Come on, underwear, socks, brush your teeth.
Good thoughts with yourself. It's just a little chat with myself.
One game that you can go back and replay in your life, and why? You can coach it, you can play it, it doesn't matter.
Oh, so many games. As a positive or negative experience?
Well, that was, you know what? They were all negative experiences until my last interview, who I can't remember who it was, with Kostas Papanikolaou. Mm-hmm. And he went back to do the final CSKA game.
And that was
a positive experience, obviously. But I always, the question's based on a negative experience, but I thought it was a great answer.
Well, I'll go to the positive. In 2004 NBA Finals Game 6 in Detroit, that was like being a different world. That's unbelievable. I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm guessing it never happened. It's never going to happen to me again.
One of the questions is top three EuroLeague memories, but we're not going to give you that. We'll give you the top one EuroLeague memory, and I'm sure it's a 10-game winning streak at this point.
Yes, I'm just a rookie, just first time in EuroLeague. I'll take it as 10 games winning streak could be the answer.
And our last question is, what are your plans when this part of your life is over? But you've already told us during this interview, you're going to coach until you can't move anymore, right?
Well, you know, no, that's not what I said. I said I'm going to coach as my final and the only job that I'm going to do in this life.
Ah, okay.
But the sooner I go and retire, I think I'm going to have more time to enjoy my kids and grandkids.
Okay, I was going to say, that answer might, for some people, that answer is Cancun again.
Yes, and again, my dear friend who works and lives in Cancun, he was telling me the wealth of the people is you measure through the free time they have. A lot of people are making a lot of money, but they have no free time. So I'll take maybe less responsibilities in this job and mentoring some people, mentoring some young, taking less stress and have more time for myself.
Five quick questions. Each one is worth 10 points, number one. Number two is worth 20, 30, 40, 50. Five questions.
I can tell you, right? I'm bad in this. So I'm warning you.
Everybody is. But they go from easy to bad. You ready?
The crossover test.
Who is the last player signed by FC Barcelona?
Gasol, right?
See, you got 10 points. You're not that bad.
This is pure luck, I'm telling you.
What do you think about him signing here in FC Barcelona? Not only as an opponent, but just as a signing in general.
Obviously, Barcelona is a serious team, serious organization. They're very well organized and structured. They know what they're doing. Is it just basketball decision? Is it a marketing decision? Whatever it is, we're talking about one of the greatest European players, future Hall of Fame. And just his presence, regardless on how much he's going to, you know, how many minutes he's going to spend on the court, he's going to help that group.
What's the name of Žalgiris Kaunas Arena?
I don't know.
You don't get that one?
No.
Žalgirio Arena.
Okay. I'll tell you, I'm going to tell you right away. I don't know.
Which city hosted the 2014 Final Four?
No way. 2014. I was in Madrid, but it was later, so...
The year before, similar to Madrid.
Nothing is similar to Madrid.
Yeah, that's true too. Italiano.
It was Milano.
There you go. We'll give you that one. I can't give you any more. They'll get mad at me.
If no
I
problem. Get you any more. Hey, listen, I'm taking what.
Who was the first guest on the crossover podcast?
Wow, shame on me. I don't know.
That's right, you should know. David Blatt. I knew you weren't going to get that one.
Okay, here you go. Here we go now. David is number one. I can tell you that. Yeah. I should know that.
Yeah, exactly. I want to be honest, he wasn't the first interview I did either. We just made sure that he was first. That's all. Two different players have made 10 three-pointers in a game in EuroLeague history since 2000. Can you name them?
10 threes.
10 threes in one game. Two different players.
Carroll.
We're going to have to take it from you. Shane Larkin and Andrew Goodluck.
Okay. Yeah, live and learn. And this is not my expertise. I'm just so...
Nobody does good in this. Don't worry about it. I think Kostas did the best out of all of them. Coach, look at it. It was just a pleasure to meet you, even though it has to be through Zoom. I was hoping that one day that we can sit down and have this discussion face-to-face, but we did it by Zoom. Next time you're in Madrid, hit me up, and I'll be sure to come over, sit down, have a drink with you. We talk about a little experience. I really appreciate your time and everything that you guys have done to make this podcast even better.
Thank you so much. Today is a special day for me. My son Luca is turning 10. It just tells you how much respect for your show. And I'm gonna run home to celebrate with my family.
Thank you so much. All our listeners from the crossover really appreciate it. Listen, the last guest I had an appointment with his wife for the birth of their child. So the okay. Crossover is becoming good enough.
All great.
Happy birthday to Luca, and good luck to you the rest of the season. Hopefully we see you in the Final Four.
All the best. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode, and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.